Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, back here on OMF, we are interviewing Boston's greatest athletes. A pretty good history here in the city of Boston. And a special day today, and Christian's put this all together, and we're doing it for the American Diabetes Association. So this guy, next guy, this is my favorite guy.
Okay,
this is the guy.
What a
that,
surprise!
Yeah, it's my guy. I mean, I watch
a lot of people's guys.
He's particularly mine, Lou. Okay. Screw you.
Oh, you can have.
Yeah, he was a guy that I watched virtually every single game, and I still marvel at the things he was able to do. Larry Bird joins us. Mr. Bird, how are you today?
Everything's good, Glenn. Good to hear you.
It's good to hear you as well. We're all getting old, but we're still hanging in there, right?
Well, nobody's getting out of this alive, so enjoy.
I couldn't believe it. I looked it up today. You have been around the NBA now for 40 years. Player, coach, executive, 40 freaking years you have been in the NBA. So you've seen all of the transitions, the change of the game. And I wonder, when you look at the game now, people don't understand this. You took under 2 3-point shots per game in your career. There were years you shot 42%, but you'd only take two shots in a game because the game was different. How about today's game? If you were playing in today's game with guys like Harden, guys like Curry, taking 13, 14 3-pointers in a game, what would your game be like?
Well, obviously we'd be taking more 3-pointers because that's where the game is evolving, but back in the day, Glenn, we wouldn't even guard guys out beyond the three-point line, and very few guys even looked at the basket, from 23 to 25 feet. But the game has changed, and the game goes through periods where it changes, and you just have to adapt to the changes, and that's what we would have done. We would adapt. I can remember back in the day, Danny Ainge said we should shoot all three-pointers every game. He said the percentages go by, anybody would do that. And the first time I really seen it was in college with Rick Pitino. They started shooting a lot of threes, and everybody was sort of questioning it. But that's where the game is now, and I like it. I think it opens the floor up. Back when we played, everything was pound and fold inside, just pound, pound, pound. And we always worried about the court wasn't big enough. Now it's spread out, court's more open, and I believe you can show your talents off a little bit more.
When you talk about changes and the difference between when you played and how the game is played now, it may have seemed silly back in the 80s and early 90s, but the idea that the NBA would actually add a four-point line, like forget about pushing the three-point line back, maybe you keep the three-point line, add a four-point line. I heard Adam Silver say that a couple weeks ago. Would you be a fan of that?
Well, it's definitely a major change, but you can remember 10 or 15 years ago, they moved the three-point line up. And eventually, they got smart about it and moved it back. But a four-point line really wouldn't make that much difference. I think that the problem with that, there'd be guys shooting in, and there'd be a lot of air balls and a lot more fast breaks. But it really doesn't matter. I mean, the league's always looking at ways to speed the game up and score more points. And if they did it, I wouldn't be surprised. But I like the game where it is now, and I think it's doing fine.
Larry, one of the differences, I think, in today's game as well is it seems like the building of these super teams, right? USA basketball, the Olympic team, guys get together, they're friends through college or whatever it might be, and next thing you know, they're forcing their way out of cities or they're joining each other's teams and somewhere else. Do you like that in the NBA right now? Can you envision it back when you guys were playing? But it just seems like a big change here in the NBA.
Well, it is, and we've seen it back in our day. You've seen where Bill Walton joined us in 86. You see where Kareem forced his way out of Milwaukee to go to the Lakers. So it's been going on for years, but not to the magnitude it is now. My problem with it, if you're a free agent, you can go anywhere you want and join any team you want. But when you start forcing your way out of teams, it's usually the small markets, too, that draft a guy put all our time in developing him. And when he gets really good, he wants to go somewhere else. But if you just wait until you're a free agent, go somewhere, I have no problem with it. But it sort of bothers me when guys want to leave a team that they're on, they still have a few years left, and force their way out, because it puts a lot of pressure on management and the franchise.
Do you watch any of Walton on TV when he does those basketball games? Oh, my God.
I have seen Bill on TV, but Bill's Bill, and he's going to do what he does best.
Oh, my God.
Would he be one of your favorite teammates? If you're going to line up all the guys you played with, would he stand out as maybe, you know, top three for you in your list?
I think that the team I played on 86, if you ask all of us, Bill would probably be number one for all of us. We enjoyed him immensely. I mean, he was a great addition, and he was a blast to play with.
Do you remember?
Did he talk as much then? Like just with no pauses, no commas, no breaks at all back then, like he does now?
No, we wouldn't let him talk back then. We just told him rebound and block shots.
Do you remember him? The first game of that season, it was a game in New Jersey. You guys lost.
New Jersey. He was awful, we lost in overtime, and it was Bill's fault.
Do you remember what he said? Do you remember what he said after the game? He told you. What did he tell you guys?
I think he said it was the worst game he's ever played,
he said he should quit right now. He said, yeah, I should quit right now. I'm done. And you're sitting there going, "Oh, you dumbass, get back out here."
Yeah, he didn't play well, and we didn't play well, but we got beaten overtime, and then we ended up winning some games from then on.
You know, Larry, do you ever? I don't know how much you of a big of a football fan you are. If you watch football, have you been paying attention at all to what's going on down in Foxborough? And do you kind of relate it to what you guys were able to do with the Celtics? I mean, the amount of years this team has been successful has been it's unheard of.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest franchises that you could ever even seen or talk about. I mean, with Brady and Belichick, I mean, it's just amazing what they've been able to accomplish over the last, 20 years. I never seen it coming, but I'm glad it happened. And I do watch the Patriots play. I watch the Colts play, my two favorite teams. And I like to watch the Bears play because I like to see them get beat.
Have you ever met Tom Brady, Bill Belichick?
Never have, no. Never
have. We got to make that happen. How has that not happened?
I'm in Indiana and they're in Boston.
I mean, but the Patriots do play the Colts on occasions. I think we may be able to get you some sideline passes the next time they play.
Well, kind of that thing with you and with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady was kind of similar to you and Magic going through that period, right?
Yeah. The one thing about me and Irvin, we played against each other in college, and we played on some college all-star teams before that. So it was always there. Then we got into pros. It's fortunate not only for us, but the league, that he went to the Lakers and I went to the Celtics. So that made it even better.
You know, they always talk about how you two kind of saved the NBA at that time, you know, and obviously the rivalry you mentioned from college to the NBA, was it always just sort of hatred because you knew he was there? I know as you guys get older, maybe that friendship slash the build, I would guess.
Well, I just admired the guy so much, and I wanted to beat him so bad, and vice versa. There's no question everyone wanted to beat us every time, and in college it all started, and it just, you know, kept going, but we did help the NBA, Irvin and I, but David Stern, you got to remember, took over in 84 as a leader of the league and as a commissioner, and things really started happening then. They started promoting the individual players, really as much as the teams back then. And then you got to remember, after that, it was Isaiah came in 82, then in 85, it was Jordan, Reggie Miller, Patrick Ewing, Charles, you know, just kept going on and on and on, and Karl Malone, John Stockton, and the league just grew from there.
So we're seeing these young kids come in. They're 18, 19 years old, okay? What is that, the ice cream truck showing up to your house every day? Hey, save one for me, okay? Save one. So we're seeing young kids, 18, 19 years of age. People don't realize this. You came into the league. You were 23 years of age, but a month later, on December the 7th, because we never forget your birthday, a month later, you turned 24. Now, you get dropped into a city like Boston, young kid, trying to become an adult or whatever. What do you think it's like for these young kids, 18, 19? You're working with these young kids now. Getting dropped in at a young age like that, not only do they have to learn the NBA game, but they got to learn life.
Yeah, the difference is if you're a European player coming over, they've already played pro ball for 2 years, so they got a feel about, you know, how it's going to be, but when you get kids from America come in, they have no clue. And that's why it always takes them, Glenn, 3 to 4 years to develop and learn. But That's a young age, and I never was for that. I always thought college was one of the greatest experiences, and get some, you know, get some opportunity to meet people and play basketball without all the pressure. Then they come in, and they, if you listen to every one of them, they think they're going to be the next star, and it don't happen. Some come out all right, but most of them don't do as well. And that's a young age. I mean, you're right. I came in at 22, 23, and I didn't know if I was ready then. Let alone being 18 years old and thinking about going to the pros. So it's different. The kids are probably more mature now than we were at 22, 23 back then, because they see more and they've done more. And I think the AAU game has helped that. They traveled a lot. They've been on travel teams. And when I grew up, we didn't even play. We played in the summer, but we played, you know, with my buddies. We didn't get to travel around and play against other players. So the game has changed, and kids are coming in a lot younger, but I wish they could do something to at least go to school for a couple of years, but whatever.
All right, we're talking to Celtics legend and NBA Hall of Famer Larry Bird. And Larry, a lot of the athletes that come into this city in Boston, we've seen it before. They can't handle whether it's the attention, the scrutiny, the media. With your background, small town, French Lick, you're at Indiana for a year, you leave, you're away from the game or college for a year, you go to Indiana State, you get dropped into this city. Why did it work for you, you know, coming from a small-town background for you as opposed to maybe other guys that can't handle it?
I don't know. You can ask Glenn. I mean, he was there every day, and I just handle it the way I handle it. You know, some days I felt like talking to the media, and some days I didn't. I always enjoyed being around them because you got to remember back then they were with us on all of our buses and all of our planes, and so we knew these guys, their families, really, and it was pretty amazing because we spent a lot of time with them, but I don't know. I just went day by day. And Glenn can tell you I'm pretty moody, and some days were better than others. But I love to play basketball, and I was in the right place to play because the fan base supported us, and I had great teammates. And, you know, I just wanted to win games. I got paid to win games, and that's all I cared about.
I'm just happy you finally figured out you were moody. Thank you. Took you how many years? Finally figured it out.
Well, I just found that out last year.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in L.A., and I hate to tell you, but I'm glad I'm waiting until you're actually on the phone to tell you that I grew up a Lakers fan in the 80s. And I know. But when I moved out here to play for the Patriots, I was just surprised at how there was this stigma attached to the city of Boston where NBA players didn't want to play for the Celtics. And I personally couldn't believe it because it's the Celtics. Why would you not want to play for the Celtics? Why would you not want to be in Boston, one of the greatest sports cities of all time? But yet there is this the stigma attached to it. Is that real or is that just fake news?
You know, I don't know. I mean, when I went to Boston, I didn't know nothing about it. And when I got out there, it didn't take long that I really enjoyed the city. And when the game started, I loved to play in the Garden, and my teammates were there. And I don't know. You know, I just think it's the greatest place in the world to play any sport, whether it's football, basketball, or baseball. Now, there's some guys that are sensitive, and they can't take the media, and the media's a little harsh on them, and the families get involved, and it's different for everyone. But in my case, we sort of just went with the flow and did what we had to do, and knowing that we had to win the next game. That's all I thought about. You have your ups and downs, you have your injuries, but overall, I didn't think it was a hard place to play. And, you know, but there's some guys that didn't enjoy playing there, but there's a lot of guys that really enjoy playing there. And there's guys that went there, didn't want to go there, and found out they loved it more than they ever thought they would. So it's the stigma is one thing, but once they get there and get settled in, you got the best fans in the world in every sport. And they're diehard sports fans, and they're going to back you. The one thing you got to remember, if you're going to play there, you better play hard. And if you do that, you'll be fine.
Christian and I have talked about this on the show numerous times because coming from L.A., you know, the stereotype was the Lakers were the black team and Boston was the white team. And you know Red, you know he drafted a black player. He made sure that all the players, black or white, were going to stay at the same hotel. He's not going to stay there. Did that ever piss you off when you'd read stories about that and they would declare the Celtics as being the white team?
You know, Glenn, I don't know. I mean, I never really got into that. Like I said earlier, all I knew when I went out there, I was getting paid to win basketball games. And whoever my teammates were, that's who they were. I was just fortunate to play with a group of guys that had the same mindset. Radar Box, the one that changed, they really helped this league out immensely, and Walter Brown, and if it wasn't for them too, I don't think this league would be anywhere close to where it is right now, because they went through a lot of struggles back in the 50s and 60s and even the 70s at times. But overall, if you really look at the history of the league, it really tough on a lot of people early on. I mean, you read stories about how Russell was treated. It just sort of breaks your heart, because I have so much respect for the man. And when I look at Bill Russell, I look at him as a man before a player, because he's a stand-up guy. And it's just hard that the struggles they went through, not only in Boston, but when they went on the road and couldn't stay in hotels, couldn't eat at certain places. It does bother me, but hopefully all that's changed. But just looking at Boston, I mean, it's the greatest place on earth. I mean, people should be fortunate they live there. I mean, it's just great. And you're going to say, well, why don't you live here? Well,
that was my follow-up. Thank you.
I thought French Lick.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you why I left, because the big dig was coming in when I was leaving. I knew that was going to be 20-some years.
You know, Larry, one of the legendary stuff when it comes to you as far as being a Celtics fan and growing up here is just the trash talk. I mean, we've seen the documentaries and calling your shots. And was there one great trash-talking moment that you can remember that was one of your favorites?
Not really. I mean, I didn't do it. I mean, after you retire, people talk about it more than they did back when we played. But if somebody said something, and I need motivation, anything that would motivate me, that would get me fired up and adrenaline flowing. And things were said at times you don't even remember it. But I don't know if there's just one. There's a bunch of them. But I know I had a lot of beefs with Chuck Person. And even though I respected the hell out of him because he played hard every night and you know, and just go around the league, there's a ton of them. And guys would say things. They might not say it directly. You might say it to one of your teammates or somebody else, and you get involved. And it was crazy. I mean, all I wanted to do was win that game and whatever it took. And that's how I felt.
Well, is it true that you would often tell the coach, the opposing coach, to get a guy out of the game because you were about to abuse
yes.
him?
Yes.
We do that quite often.
There was a night, I believe it was in Chicago, and you were all pissed off because you had family and friends showing up, and there was a ticket snafu, or what, do you remember this?
Right.
And you walk over to Doug Collins, the coach of the Bulls, and you start reaming his ass out because your tickets were screwed up. And then,
no, it wasn't quite that. I told Doug when he walked out stretching, and I've known Doug forever, good guy, and always respected him, but he walked by me, it was just me and him, and I was laying on the floor stretching, and it was about, I don't know, 30 seconds before the game started. I said, hey, Doug, come here. And he came over, and he goes, how you doing? And I said, good. I said, you go over and sit down, because we're getting ready to pound your asses tonight, and don't take it personal. And I swear to God, he went off on me.
You know what?
So I started chirping back, and we ended up beating him, and I never said anything after. But I couldn't believe he got so mad at me in about 10-second period. I couldn't believe it.
You ready for this?
So then I knew I had to kick his ass, you know?
He had 33 in the first half. In that game, 33 in the first half. And by the way, the Chuck Person stuff, after the third dagger on a Christmas Day game, do you remember what you said to him?
Well, it wasn't Christmas Day. It was before Christmas. Yeah, I know exactly what. I ain't going to say it, but I know exactly what.
Happy effing Christmas. That's what you said.
He wasn't even in the game. He was on the bench where I shot it from.
Well, the crazy thing is that your personality, I think, which we all love and respect and admire, really, the fact that you can not only, you know, talk the talk, but walk the walk. Now, you'd have a cell phone on you. You'd have a recorder. Somebody would paint you as who knows what they would paint you as.
You'd be a bad guy.
You'd be the bad guy. You'd be the villain.
No, I'd be all right. But anyway, I'm just glad I played in the era I did. All these video cameras and phones. Yeah, I probably had myself in trouble quite often.
All right, so Michael Jordan, I don't know when it was, maybe a couple weeks ago, they asked him who his all-time pickup basketball team would be, and you weren't on it, but Pippen was, Magic was, Worthy, and Olajuwon. So I want to give you the same opportunity. If you had an opportunity to pick your all-time best pickup team, who were the four guys you would pick? Obviously, you would be one of the five. I know, this is what we do here.
Yeah. I know. It's tough because you always leave somebody out. But, yeah, you can go with any of those top Celtics. I mean, you can go Russell. And I always thought Mikal and Jabbar and Michael, obviously, and Magic. I mean, they're the best, man. And, you know, then you go right below them. You got LeBron. You got Kobe. You got Shaq. You know, I mean, there's just so many. So it's hard. It's hard to pick.
So your all time your top five would be nothing but guys you played with.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that'll work.
Yeah,
here.
It's pretty easy. We handle our own.
I want to ask you, because we keep on talking about Tom Brady, and you talked about him, and we marvel at what he's able to do at age 42 and conditioning or whatever. Your back went on you at about what age? 33, 34 during
32,
that
period. Yeah. 32, yeah.
And I saw what you were going through. You'd go out playing a game, let's say, on the road in Cleveland. He'd put up 26, 27, 13 rebounds, 7, 8 assists. And then you would have trouble walking back to the bus, getting on the plane. They would drop you into this contraption on the plane. Do you remember it? Mr. Back.
And they would, oh, yeah.
Yeah, they would drop you into that. And then the next night, you'd go back out there and play. And I wonder how you mentally got through that, because physically you were breaking down. You obviously still wanted to play. It eventually ended your career, but how did you fight through all of that?
Well, you remember Dan Dyrick.
He
helped me. He's my therapist, and he helped me a lot through a lot of that. But mentally, it was really tough because you had to get up. And, you know, I mean, there's times where that one year I was going from games, home games, to the hospital getting traction. I don't know if it helped, but, you know, that wasn't for a long period of time. But it was a battle. Mentally, it just every day, it finally wore me down where I had to get out. So I knew in 92, after Cleveland beat us in, I think it was six or seven games, I knew that was my last game because I just couldn't take it anymore. So it's unfortunate, Glenn, that happened. But the way I played the game from early age all the way through, I knew when I got in the league I wasn't going to have a long career. But I wasn't going to change the way I played. So it is what it is. And, you know, I'm pretty healthy now. My back's been feeling pretty decent. So, you know, I mean.
So I'll leave you with this, because you've said this in the past. You're quoted as saying it numerous times, that you never thought you would live a long life.
You feel no, 32.
At 32. Do you feel differently now?
I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I mean, like I always said, you don't see many seven-footers walking around at 70. I've always said that. But anyway, things have changed. People are living longer. You know, you always want to live a healthy life, but you just never know what's going to happen. Right now, I feel pretty healthy, so hopefully I can stick around a while.
Well, we're happy to hear that. We really appreciate you spending some time. It's a big deal for us back here in Boston, trying to raise some money for the American Diabetes Association, and having one of the all-time greats, Boston athletes, on was a privilege for us. So you stay well, all right?
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, all right, Larry.
Larry Bird, here on OMF.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.